This is the Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Goodison Park.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Royal Blue Podcast and a Royal Blue Podcast we all wish we didn't have to do on the back of an abysmal 4-1 home defeat for Everton against Liverpool last night. I'm your host today, Sam Carroll, and I'm joined by Chris Beasley and Adam Jones in the Liverpool Echo office on Old Hall Street in Liverpool and in his dark teenage bedroom with the curtains drawn in a state of mourning is Dave Prentice. Good morning, Dave. Just woke up.
No, not at all, but the sun's shining very brightly outside, and if I had the windows drawn, you wouldn't be able to see a thing. So, you know, at least you can see just the dim silhouette of me. I'm probably best not to see my face at the moment now, because we are in a state of mourning, as you say.
No light at the end of the tunnel for Everton. No light at the end of the tunnel for Rafa Benitez. Adam, I want to start with you. We have just, in the last hour or so, seen that Farhad Moshiri, in all his wisdom, has texted Jim White of TalkSport to update Everton supporters on the situation regarding Rafa Benitez as manager of Everton Football Club. Not the best move.
No, I think it's downright disrespectful, to be honest, to Everton supporters. It's a bit of a slap in the face. I don't think anybody's necessarily surprised that Farhad Moshiri has gone down his own sort of unique brand of, you know, communication, in air quotes, to go to to go to Jim White and do this. But, you know, just sending any sort of journalist or radio host or anybody like that a text and thinking that that's going to be okay in a situation such as this is just, it's just really disrespectful to those fans, you know, who've made themselves very clear. You know, they made themselves clear in that Brentford match when they brought that banner with them, which I think, is, you know, in no uncertain terms was directed at, you know, not just the players and the coaching staff, but the board as well. And then the exact same happened on Wednesday night, didn't it? You know, there was the banner was back out. We all saw those scenes at full time, you know, with board members getting a lot of angry supporters facing them at the end of the game. So for Farhad Moshiri to come out with this sort of statement, you know, he was conspicuous in his absence, you'd have to say, from that Merseyside derby. I know he only gets a set amount of days that he can come into the UK on his visa, but, yeah, you know, he can't come in for a Merseyside derby. That's one he chooses to miss. I think that's a really, really strange one in my thinking. And yeah, for him to essentially skirt around the issue of, you know, Everton fans are directing their anger at the board as well as at the manager and at the players at this current juncture, for him to kind of, you know, essentially avoid that question altogether and just like essentially just sent the text about Rafa Benitez. I think it is just so, so disrespectful. And I just don't understand why he doesn't come out, you know, in, you know, the official club channel, sit down and like address these questions directly. You know, it comes as no surprise, really, that Everton have just cancelled their in-person general meeting, haven't they?
Yeah.
You know, COVID regulations is probably going to be the main reason for that, but it's very, very handy that the people in charge are not going to be answering direct questions from the club shareholders in a direct forum such as that. Well, to be honest, Farhad Moshiri didn't even attend the last in-person general meeting either. So, yeah, I think he really needs to change up his methods of communication, because fans just aren't going to accept this anymore. You know, fans were already hugely angry, and quite rightly so, you'd have to say, after yesterday's performance and, you know, what's essentially been a culmination of many, many years of frustrations, and stuff like this is only going to make things worse. So the owner really needs to rethink what he's going to be doing in the future, and hopefully he's going to be able to give supporters a more direct line of communication soon.
Dave, Farhad is very much his own man and a very rich man, and he can obviously do as he pleases, but there's got to be people leaning on him, surely, who might be suggesting things like texting Jim White on TalkSport the day after a humiliation at your arch rivals is not the best of ideas.
He's been lent on many, many times in the past, and, you know, so should we politely say advised what might be a good course of action, and has always acted independently and done his own thing. notably in the appointments of Rafael Benitez.
Yeah.
You know, which you know, so it wasn't a universally agreed upon decision. Likewise, when he appointed Sam Allardyce, I'm thinking of the bid for Wilfried Zaha that went in, you know, and very, very soon afterwards, the club put out a statement saying that actually, no, they had made a bid, but they weren't pursuing it. He often does appear to do things without talking to and cooperating with other people at the football club. And this is the latest one. I mean, I don't think he's naive enough to have believed that, you know, what he would say in a text message to Jim White wouldn't suddenly be made public. I mean, Jim White's made everything else that he said to him public. So you guess he's going to do exactly the same thing again. But as we've said, you know, so many times before, he does things off his own bat. And that's part of the problem, really. You know, so that there needs to be a lot more agreement between, you know, so the powers that be. It's almost like there's so many divisions at the football club, and it goes right to the very, very top. So no, not surprised at all to see Farhad, you know, sort of doing things off his own bat. And I agree that people at the football club will be a little bit surprised and a little bit disgruntled as well, not least the media team that, you know, would totally accept and believe that statements like that, you know, effectively votes of confidence in the manager's future, should be put out on the official channels, you know, so rather than in a text message to an independent channel. So I'm guessing that it's not just us who are irritated by it. I think lots and lots of people at the football club themselves will also be irritated by it.
I think what makes it worse, Bees, is that it's not even a surprise anymore. When we were finishing off in work last night, just after midnight, it was jokingly suggested Farhad will be on TalkSport tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Wake up next morning and there he is.
Yeah, like we said, this is standard Mr. Moshiri, isn't it? This is the way it's always been, and it was unfortunate last night. Obviously, those who were there attending the match, those high-ranking club officials, like to Bill Kenwright and Marcel Brands, they were the ones who were in the firing line after the final whistle. They were there, whereas Mr. Moshiri, as Adam has said, wasn't there. I don't think he's been there since the first game of the season, the opening match of the Benitez era. And yeah, it was strange because for all the humiliation over, I suppose when Benitez was appointed, and let's have this right, it's the most controversial appointment in this sissy story of football history. If you'd have said, fast forward to December, first derby under Benitez, and what's like the worst scenario you could imagine, and it'd be, you know, going in on a winless run like this, the sort of form that Everton have shown, and then being humiliated by Liverpool and with their fans cheering Rafa's name, something that hasn't happened en masse with Evertonians. I mean, it's the absolute worst you could have imagined. So the fact that, again, like say, Mr. Moshiri wasn't there, and then he comes out with this sort of line of communications, it sort of exemplifies the mess that the club are in. Because on the one hand, this is the man who is going to deliver, is going to finally make Everton's stadium dream and new stadium dream into a reality. But from a footballing side of things, the 5 years since he took control of the club, it's become an absolute shambles. There's this patchwork quilt of a squad now that they've got. The way that the team are playing just seems no heart. There's a like culmination of six managers' efforts in the space of 5 years. And ultimately, it's Mr. Moshiri who makes those decisions to hire and fire those bosses and bring in the players that he has done. And you have to say, unfortunately for him, he's largely squandered that fortune and building that team.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
One of the more interesting things to come out after the match, caught on camera, Adam, was Marcel Brands being confronted by an angry Everton fan, and credit to Brands for stopping and having that discussion. But Brands himself said, didn't he, that there was almost like a pointed line in which he says, is it only the players? What do you think he meant by that?
It's really interesting, isn't it? You know, I've seen a lot of debate on social media about whether he's, you know, talking about the fans or his other members of the board or the coaching staff. You know, genuinely, he could have meant anything. And, you know, it goes back to, you know, this lack of real communication that we've been talking about with Farhad Moshiri. That extends to Marcel Brands as well. When was the last time Everton's director of football came out and, you know, gave a point-by-point sort of plan to supporters about which direction this club is meant to be going in?
Yeah.
And I realise it's difficult for him because You know, usually you'd expect the director of football to be the person who like appoints the manager, and he is the man who then sets out the direction. And you know, there's no real sense that Marcel Brands has been allowed to do that. Essentially, you know, he's been given this position of director of football, but is he really a director of football? You know, when you're working with the likes of Carlo Ancelotti and Rafa Benitez, you know, these are very high profile managers who are, you know, I don't want to say set in their ways, but you know, they are a little bit set in their ways, essentially. So what does Marcel Brands do in that situation? He's got to mould himself around them rather than the other way around, which is not the way that a director of football should work. But saying that, I think, you know, the kind of lack of communication from Brands is a really pointed thing, and that then leads into, you know, that comment that he made yesterday. Everton fans don't really know what he meant by that comment, because we hardly really heard from him. You know, he makes a few comments in Dutch media, you know, a few times a season, but that's essentially all we hear in terms of direct communication from Brands. Well, he does speak at the general meetings, I suppose, as well, but you know, once a year isn't really enough in my head. So genuinely, he could have meant anything in that scenario. You know, it seems to be a very heated sort of on one end, it was a very heated discussion from that fan, wasn't it? Who wanted answers. You know, he was talking about Brands' recruitment of the players that took to the pitch yesterday, and you know, he seemed to suggest that it wasn't just the recruitment side of things that was the issue. And you know, you've got to say, I do agree with him. You know, it's not just recruitment that's led Everton down this road. It's been a whole litany of things. So it's really hard to, you know, put your finger on what Marcel Brands was actually talking about. You know, again, as with Mashiri, I'd like to see, you know, him sit down with the club's official channels and then give his, you know, full thoughts on where the club is going in the future, and you know, maybe take some questions from supporters as well in the upcoming general meeting. You know, it's just a real mess. It is just another signification of the real mess that Everton find themselves in at the minute, and it is really sad to see, isn't it? That you don't want to see scenes like that at Goodison Park, but you know, in a way, you know, I think everybody at every level at the club at the minute needs to be held accountable for what's going on. It's not just the players' fault. It's not just the manager's fault. It's not just the board's fault. It's everybody. It's everybody collectively at the minute, which is who's failing, and it's really sad to see.
Preno, Phil Kirkbride wrote in his post-match verdict last night that Marcel Brands was left looking shell-shocked by the reaction of Everton fans at the full-time whistle, and when Bill Kenwright and Denise Barrett-Baxendale were caught on camera during the game, I think the same reaction could be applied to them. But it puts a lot of pressure on the power brokers at Everton in the coming days and makes the game against Arsenal even more important when you kind of factor in that reaction.
Yeah, that worries me, the reaction of the crowd and the impact it could have on what, again, is a very, very important game on Monday now. Well, they're all very, very important, aren't they? But, you know, you saw in the final whistle last night, some of the players heading towards the Gladys Street end to applaud them, you know, for their support during the game. And it was almost like there was a force field put in front of the, you know, the stand. They got so close, and I thought, hang on, is this wise? Maybe, you know, so bearing in mind, you know, the reaction that they got down at Brentford. And then eventually, you know, so because he didn't get that close, one fan actually came out and, you know, confronted, of all people, Anthony Gordon. You know, so, and you just wonder, like, you know, so what is a young lad like that, you know, so going to have put into his head by, you know, occasions and experiences like this? It's worrying, you know, so it's, I know it's a double-edged sword, you know, the fans only react to what they're seeing on the pitch, but equally, you know, so can they do more to try and, you know, sort of inspire the players? You know, it's a chicken and egg situation. You don't know really, do you? You know, so what should come first? But it worries me now that, you know, so Monday night could be horrible, you know, so if Everton start badly again when it needs to be. Jonathan, back was at the 2016 season when we had like a really bad run under Koeman, and they played Arsenal in a night match, and it was one of those rousing nights. Bizarrely, Ashley Williams scored, you know, so an incredible header on the street, and it was a night where the crowd really got behind the players and turned, you know, what was like a really important night into a rousing home victory. I think we'd like, we hadn't won for like 8 or 9 games. We battered 5-0 at Chelsea. It was grim. Not as bad as this, But it, you know, it was grim, and it was, it turned on that night. But you can't really see that happening on Monday night, because the fans are so disillusioned and disaffected. And it does appear to be the visible board members. You like to see your Bill Kenwrights, Denise Barrett-Baxendales, who are taking the flak at the moment for the owner. You know, they're effectively shielding him by being visible. I mean, Farhad Moshiri makes the decisions. You know, so he's the guy that, you know, so makes the appointments and makes the calls, you know, and decides where this money's going to be spent. And he hasn't been, as Chris said, to many games this season. I mean, I think, I can remember him being at one, maybe. Was it Watford, where he turned up like 20 minutes into the game? I mean, we're told this text message to Jim White was, you know, made from America. So, you know, quite rarely watched the game last night. I don't know if he watched the game, no one knows. But I think it would be really helpful if he came out and made a proper statement, you know, sort of to the fan base, A, to try and reassure them and to try and convince them that he does have, you know, sort of an overarching plan as to what he wants to do, you know, so regarding his running of the football club. Because at the moment, everyone's left in the dark. You know, so no one knows quite what this, you know, sort of this overarching plan is.
We are left to understand, Bees, that Farhad Moshiri will be in attendance for the Arsenal game next week, but that puts so much pressure on that 90 minutes for the players, the manager, everyone.
I guess that pressure's already there, given that the run that they're on now. I think we worked out now it's the longest winless run since 1999, curiously, which came after the 1-0 victory at Anfield, which was Everton's last victory at Anfield for over two decades. That followed, I think, a similar winless run. But yeah, it's a huge game. But we keep saying this, and I suppose the longer it goes on, it's only inevitable, isn't it? I mean, we said Brentford wasn't a must-win game. It was a must-not-lose, but they went and lost it last night. I mean, the problem was, as much as it hurts Evertonians last night's game and the way that Liverpool dismantled them with ease, it's not those games, it's not the footballing lessons at the Etihad that you're going to define their season, as much as you'd like to kind of get a few points from those kind of fixtures. It is the losing to Watfords and the losing to Brentfords that really hurt, and they should be doing much better. And bringing in Rafa Benitez was seen as this bitter pill that Everton had to swallow, horrible taste in the mouth from his association with Liverpool. But this was on the proviso that he was seemingly a safe pair of hands that Mr. Moshiri thought could safely navigate them to Bramley Moor Dock. But hitting some choppy waters right now. And
might need a water taxi.
Rafa talked about how, you know, eighth means nothing to him. I mean, you chop your hand off now if you offered him eighth place, like I say. And, you know, this is something that both Marco Silva and Sam Allardyce achieved at the club, finishing eighth. And then, you know, you take that right now. This is a real problem with Everton looking over the shoulders now at the relegation zone. I think if Burnley had won that game, it was postponed. It could only be a couple of points, possibly, between them and the drop zone. And you don't know when your next win's coming from. So huge pressure anyway against Arsenal. I don't even know whether Mikel Arteta confronting Rafford even roused the crowd like it did at Anfield. I don't know what it'd take. But yeah, like I said, whether Mr. Moshiri's in attendance or not, huge pressure. They really do need a result now.
Be an interesting straightener, though. Arteta versus Benitez.
Well, it would have seen somebody sent me a list of, I don't know how they worked it out because it was quite curious, but a list of the Premier League's hardest bosses this week. There was only 19 in the list and they missed Benitez out. Didn't even register. So, yeah.
Was top.
I don't know. Yeah, it was Conte. But it was Conte. Sean Dyche was in the bottom half, which was quite strange. Who hard over his jacketless appearance at a snowy turf moor. Yeah. But, yeah.
To focus a little bit on Benitez, Adam, the conversation has almost changed, and you know it's in the media, social media, and I'm no doubt everyone who went the game or watched the game last night was discussing it over their post-match drinks. But for me, it almost feels like the conversation has changed from Rafa in or Rafa out to, if Everton do change manager, who do they get? And this kind of run that we're in of, this isn't working, sack the manager. It's clearly not working. Everton have been left in such a strange position, such a back-to-the-wall position, that the next logical step just doesn't seem to be appearing.
Well, that's it. Like, Everton have just been left in this mad cycle at the minute of just know, having this, you know, as B said, this mishmash of a squad, essentially. A manager comes in and he can't knit them all together, so we sack him and then we bring in another, and you know, he might get it together for a couple of months and then we sack him, and then it can't go on like this. And like, I think that's the quandary that Everton find themselves in, isn't it? Because there's an acceptance that Everton can't just keep sacking managers. They do need to give a manager time at some point to be able to actually, you know, produce some sort of system, some sort of idea for the future. But you know, when you've got this lack of communication, as I keep coming back to from the owner and the director of football, you don't know what direction the club wants to run in. Yeah. Who's deciding the direction? Is it the owner or is it the director of football? And we don't know what direction the club really wants to go in. You know, if Farhad Moshiri's gone down the route of Rafa Benitez now, I think we've just said previously, it seems that, you know, that was a decision to be made of, you know, be a stable pair of hands until they get to Bradley Moore. Is that going to be the case? You know, the problem that you've got with appointing somebody like Rafa Benitez, who Bees rightly says was probably the most controversial appointment in Merseyside football history. You know, if you were going to go down that route, then you needed to have, you know, assurances that he was going to be, he was going to be able to do it. Well, but it looks at the minute, you know, we've gone eight matches now without a Premier League win. We've got really, really tough games on the horizon. You don't really know where the next points are going to come from. Is that going to be enough? Is Moshiri going to end up pulling the trigger? We know he's got an itchy trigger finger, as he's proven in the past. He's come out with these comments to Jim White today. Some of these was sharing before, and he made similar comments about 3 weeks or so, I think, before Ronald Koeman ended up getting sacked. So, you know, if these are going to be empty comments, then what's the point?
Yeah.
He needs to stick by them if he's going to do it. But I think the issue that Everton fans have got, and a lot of Everton fans have got, is that, you know, a lot of Everton fans don't believe that Rafa Benitez was the right appointment in the first place. So they were never behind him.
Yeah.
So Rafa Benitez is in a sort of unique position where he was always starting off such a low base that he couldn't afford this kind of run of games, essentially, because so many supporters were already just not invested in somebody like Rafa Benitez. So does that then produce this sort of unique situation where the cycle has to continue for it to be broken? It's such a mad scenario, isn't it? Because the Brentford game and this game have just felt like huge, huge turning points, and they've felt like massive moments in another managerial tenure.
Yeah.
You do wonder what's going to happen next, and I really do wonder what's going to be how Benitez is.
Do you think there's a way back for him?
I genuinely don't know how he's going to be able to recover from Liverpool fans throughout that match singing his name in the Merseyside derby where they've embarrassed Everton.
Yeah.
I really wonder where there's a way back from that. And I feel sorry for Benitez in a lot of ways, because he's right. You know, he's faced injury issues. You know, the problems do escalate a lot further than him. But at the same time, I think he has made mistakes over the last few weeks in that Brentford game. I have no idea why he only made one substitution, for example, against Liverpool. I've got no idea why he only played two in centre midfield. I think it was very evident from the first 30 seconds that we needed three players in central midfield, but he waited until we were 3-0 down, 3-1 down, sorry, to eventually bring Fabian Delph on. So he's made mistakes as well, but he's not the overriding issue. He's part of the problem over the last few weeks, but he's not the major issue. And that's why I do feel sorry for him. And I understand why there's a lot of talk about whether this managerial cycle and how Everton get off it. But it's just, you know, after a game like that Merseyside derby, it just felt so significant that I do just wonder where Everton go next.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Prenon, I'm sure you'll appreciate that myself and Adam and a few others from the Echo Sport Desk ended up in the grapes last night. And we were, one of the things we were discussing, and feels quite pertinent is that it doesn't actually feel that long ago, and it wasn't that long ago that we were sat on this podcast discussing how almost flawless the start Rafa Benitez has had at Everton had been. You know, it wasn't long after you spoke to him at Finch Farm and all the ideas he seemingly was having were coming across well. The decisions he made, I don't think at the time, after the results, even at the draw at Old Trafford and we beat Norwich, I don't think anyone was batting an eyelid that we'd moved James Rodriguez on, that we'd moved Moise Keane on. The decision to bring Solomon Rondon in seemed solid. Andros Townsend had had a great start. He's dropped off in recent weeks. Are you surprised by how quickly that downturn has come into effect, kind of mitigated obviously by injuries and form, but it wasn't that long ago that everything seemed fine?
I am surprised, but yeah, you do have to take into account, you know, so the mitigating circumstances that you mentioned there. I mean, the start of the season was bright. I think somebody told me before last night that Rafael Benitez had taken the same number of points from his first 13 games as Carlo Ancelotti took from his last 13 games. and that was like, you know, on the back of a very, very bright start to the season. After the draw at Old Trafford, you know, with the international break, everybody was very, very upbeat and, you know, optimistic. I think we were fifth on the table and looking forward to a, you know, sort of a decent campaign. And it's no coincidence that, you know, so Calvert-Lewin had been out of the equation then for a couple of games. Doucouré got injured. Yerry Mina, I saw a stat actually this morning which surprised me, that Everton have conceded, I think it was 1.14 goals per game this season with Mina, 2.28 without him. You know, so I didn't realise he was quite that influential. But it is like effectively a spine of the side taken out. And also, if you bear in mind that, you know, the people that Rafa brought into the club, he did so with a very limited game plan in mind. And that was because he only had, you know, so literally what, 1.7 million quid to spend. And so he brought in a couple of wide players who he knew would be, you know, direct, would offer pace that the squad lacked, and would be able to get crosses into the box to take advantage of the aerial threat of Calvert-Lewin and to a lesser degree Richarlison. And then obviously, you know, so Calvert-Lewin is taken out of the equation. And so that entire strategy is rendered pretty much redundant. And, you know, we start looking like a team lacking massively in creativity as a result of that. So, yeah, I'm surprised how it has unravelled as quickly as it has. But you also have to bear in mind, you know, so why that has been the case. The manager has had a really, really difficult, you know, so set of cards to play with. But, you know, he's paid, you know, so a good sum of money to actually provide solutions to that. And he's got to do it. I mean, totally take on board what Adam said about the formation last night. I was surprised that, you know, Liverpool were given so much space in midfield, that Everton were allowing Liverpool to dictate. If you say allow Liverpool to dictate, I mean, this is an outstanding Liverpool team that has battered so many teams this season. I mean, they've scored two goals in every single game bar one. 20 out of 21 matches they've scored at least two goals. And the only one they didn't was Chelsea, when Chelsea had 10 men, you know, so defended deep. They scored five at Old Trafford in 50 minutes. You know, they're an absolutely incredible side. I said on the last podcast, one of the best Liverpool teams I think I've ever seen. But it doesn't help that when you actually allow them, you know, sort of to play to their strengths by gifting them a little bit of, you know, sort of midfield freedom. And we did that, you know, so very, very early on last night. So the manager has to take some responsibility for that. But overall, no, he's been dealing with a very, very dodgy set of cards, you know, so for a long time now. And again, as I said last week, I think it's, we're going to have to endure it a little bit longer, because there's no obvious sign of Calvert-Lewin returning. I think Phil wrote in this piece today that it could be Boxing Day before we even see him again. Yerry Mina, who knows how much longer he's going to be out for. But, you know, that's only two players now, you know, so the other players are starting to come back. Damari Gray's available, Takura's available. So, you know, we've got to try and find solutions to this, because otherwise we will end up, you know, embroiled in a relegation fight. At the moment, there's still a little bit of daylight between ourselves and the teams at the bottom, but that can be eroded very, very quickly. You know, so depending on what the other teams do, and provided we don't pick up, you know, so points in the next few games. I mean, Arsenal, traditionally, that's a team that we've done okay against at Goodison over the last few years. You know, and there's nothing to suggest that that's a game we should be terrified of. And then Palace are decent. Palace are, you know, well organised, having a reasonable season so far. But again, we need to get something from. So we need to find solutions to these problems very, very quickly. Otherwise, things will get even worse.
Same question for you quickly, David. Is there a way back for Rafa Benitez still?
I think so. I mean, again, I said last week I worried about the worst case scenario last night, which was getting battered and having the Liverpool fans, you know, sort of singing Rafael Benitez's name. And that in turn then turns the fans who have actually supported him and backed him against him, you know, because it was just like, you know, the straw that broke the camel's back. But I didn't see that. I think a lot of fans, I mean, the ones that didn't want him to begin with are never going to want him. That's always going to be the case. But a lot of fans realising, you know, sort of the problems he's had to deal with, and I've just spoken about earlier, there are so many more problems at the football club, you know, so rather than just, you know, sort of this manager who is a good coach and is a good manager, you know, we know that. So, yeah, of course, there's a way back. But, you know, it's going to be tough. I mean, remember, what do you think about the FA Cup draw? how we desperately don't want to get Manchester City away in the third round. And, you know, the season ended immediately. There is a way back, but it's going to be tough. But, you know, in order to find that way back, he's got to find solutions on the pitch very, very quickly and start getting results together very, very quickly.
Because I know that Yerry Mina and Dominic Calvert-Lewin are so important to the way Everton play. Mina is a unit at the back of defence, was probably in the best form of his Everton career before he got injured, and Calvert-Lewin adds so much to the attack. There's not really a player like him in the ranks at the moment. But there's the argument to be made that last night they were the only two on that pitch who would have started over the team Rafa Benitez selected. And as Adam and Preno pointed out, he did get it wrong with the choice of system in midfield, and Liverpool were afforded too much space. But there's some players who are horribly out of form in that team at the moment, and really do, you know, the manager's getting a lot of stick, the board are getting a lot of stick. A lot of people are taking a lot of flak, rightly so, but, you know, there's a lot of players out there who aren't doing, who seemingly just aren't playing for the shirt almost, who just look really poor. Alan last night, for example, I thought was awful.
Yeah, he's been struggling, hasn't he, since Decore got injured. Obviously, Decore's back now, but yeah, he's dropped off, and he's not the only one. We'll keep naming individuals, but yeah, look, Luca Dean, you could say, because he's not had Calvert-Lewin there as an outlet to cross to, but I don't know what seems to have happened with his crossing. He seems to sort of hesitate a lot now, as whereas before he wouldn't think, he'd just get forward and put in those great deliveries. And he's another one, you know, international class player, plays for World Champions France. So there's no doubt in his pedigree. Look at the other teams he's played for, PSG, Roma, Barcelona. What a quality footballer he is, but he's not enjoying his best football. And he's, and like you say, he's certainly not the only one in life as Ireland. There's players who are woefully out of form, and when you get a few like that, you really are in trouble. Yeah, Calvert-Lewin's your top scorer from last season, and is going to be a vital cog in any sort of a team. There's no like-for-like replacement, I'd say, even in the Premier League for him, the way he is such a dominant aerial player. So, yeah, that's going to change the way Everton play. And again, at your end of the pitch, Yerry Mina is the dominant centre back, but yeah, like you're saying, as a whole, that's only two players, and that's unfortunate. But injuries can happen like that. You can be without a couple of players, and yeah, there should be more than enough in there. Maybe, like I said before, maybe not as much as it hurts as maybe not to get something against Liverpool or Manchester City, but you know, all these other fixtures, Brentford, even Arsenal at home, should be have enough on the pitch there to get results in matches like that. So, you can't just keep saying the injuries. Yes, it's a tough blow for Benitez, and it has sort of given people a bit more sympathy for him that he's been without his main goal scoring outlet. But it's not like he's got half the team out there. Most of those injuries are back now, and even players who started the season well. I mean, Townsend got mentioned as well before. Great starts of the season, he's dropped off. So when a few of them are all struggling, you really are concerned about. Why aren't they picking the points up? And the longer that goes, it's almost quarter of the season now without a victory. And all those other teams, like I said, below them have sort of closed the gap, and some of them have picked up and have changed their manager. I don't think a change of manager is the solution. Like we said, there's been so many, you just can't keep repeating the process, as whether you wanted Benitez in the first place or not. And I wouldn't have made that appointment, certainly. And I think I've been quite clear about that. But once he's in there now, I just can't see how repeating the cycle and changing the manager is the solution. But Rafa Benitez, with or without these injured players, should be doing a lot better.
The Royal Blue Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
And it's the 2nd of December 2021, Adam. If you would have told me I'd be saying this a year ago, I might well have said you were mad. But is it time against Arsenal, Fabian Delph? Get him back?
I mean, I was shocked that he didn't start against Brentford, because I think that, you know, you can kind of discount that Man City game. Everyone was pretty poor in that Man City game. And, you know, as Bees rightly said, you know, they're not the kind of teams that we should be looking to beat necessarily, and, you know, hoping that we're going to get 3 points out of this season, like, as much as we'd love to. But, like, I think in the two games previously to that, Fabian Delph had been Everton's best player. You know, he'd come on against Wolves, and I think he ended up helping to change the game in that second half. And, you know, Everton might have come out with a draw in a different scenario on that day. And I thought he was really good in the hour that he played against Spurs as well. You know, he's just an effective player who can sit in front of that back four. His positional awareness in terms of defence, I think, is really, really good. He's always looking for the ball off the centre-backs. He's really tidy in possession and gets Everton, you know, progressing up the pitch. You know, it's all really simple things. You know, I've said before on the podcast, it's not as if he's, you know, putting in these barnstorming performances. You know, he's putting in, you know, 7, 7.5 out of 10 performances, but yeah, there's so few Everton players who are consistently doing that at this point that, yeah, it kind of elevates him into one of Everton's most informed players. So to see him among the substitutes against Brentford, I was a little bit shocked, even with Abdoulaye Doucouré coming back, because I just thought that, you know, Doucouré is obviously, you know, he's got a huge engine on him, and, you know, his defensive positional awareness is really good, and, you know, I think he gets forward a lot as well. But, you know, I don't think there was any sort of semblance that he was going to be fully match fit. And then putting him next to Allen, who, as we've said, is struggling, and, you know, I think his mobility has probably been one of his key components that has been failing so far this season. So it just made sense for me to put three in midfield in that game. He didn't, and I was kind of thinking to myself, oh, okay, maybe he's, you know, Fabian Delph has had injury issues and, you know, his own fitness problems. Maybe he's resting him and just making sure that he's fit for the derby. No, didn't do that either. Didn't match up against Liverpool in that midfield, which I think was a huge mistake. And, you know, you see for Henderson's opening goal of the game, you've got Doucouré and Allen essentially in the 6-yard box. You could throw a blanket over, I think, about 7 Everton players who were just essentially marking the same space. And Jordan Henderson's got the freedom of about 10 yards on the edge of the box. It's a really good finish from him, to be fair, but he shouldn't have that much space on the edge of the Everton box, especially not that early in the game. You know, would it have been a little bit different if Everton had had 3 players in midfield, if Allen and Doucouré could have trusted Delph to be marking that space in the edge of the 6-yard box? Maybe they'd have been hanging around the edge of the penalty area. You know, it's buts and maybes, but I do think that Everton would have been much more effective if they'd have had another man in midfield. And, you know, as I say, Delph is, you know, de facto one of Everton's most informed players at the minute. So, yeah, I think against Arsenal, I do think he needs to be starting. And I do think it would be wise to go for a three-man midfield. Who drops out of that team, I'm not sure. Well, actually, probably Salomon Rondon, isn't it, after his injury now. So, yeah. Yeah, I think Fabian Delph does become one of the first names on the team sheet for me, which is, you know, as you say, really, really interesting situation to be in.
It was almost a Shakespearean tragicomedy moment last night, Dave, as Salomon Rondon goes off. His best performance in Everton shirts was a standing ovation and a tweaked hamstring. We hope, let's hope he hasn't completely pulled it, because we need anyone we can get. For that attacking line against Arsenal, where do you even go with it? Richarlison, another player horribly out of form. Andros Townsend, out of form. Do you change it up? Do you put Richarlison down the middle? Cenk Tosun, Ellis Sims, where do you go with it?
We've spoken before about Richarlison playing centre forward and how he's not a centre forward, you know, so he's much better playing off a player, and you're nullifying his effectiveness by playing him up top and asking him to try and hold the ball, especially in the manner in which Benitez has set his teams up to play. You take advantage of crosses from the flanks. And for me, the only like for like, well, as we said earlier, there isn't a like for like replacement for Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Salomon Rondon, you know, did do very well last night, comparatively speaking, compared to what we've seen from him previously. You know, he held the ball up well, put himself about. You know, he did okay. the only other player we've got of that ilk is Cheng Tosin. And, you know, he was brought, admittedly, many years ago to take advantage of crosses from the flanks and did so briefly, games that he had, you know, under Sam Allardyce. That's how long ago it was. And then has scored, you know, a couple of goals since. And to me, I think that if you're going to persist with this system of, you know, sort of getting the ball into wide areas and trying to get crosses into the box, which we did at Brentford. I mean, how many times did you see good quality balls in from the flanks just going begging? I mean, Damari Gray on at least a couple of occasions because there's nobody in there. Rondon wasn't up to speed enough to get on the end of them. He had one in the first half. So Tosin's the only other player that fits that bill. Ellis Sims, possibly, but he's just come back from a major injury himself and has been out for a long, long time and has got no first-team experience whatsoever. And, you know, that is asking so much of such a young lad in a game of that importance. So for me, Cheng Tosin, I think, you know, has to be brought in from the cold. There, he got a couple of minutes last night and managed to miss control one with his first touch. But I can't see any other alternative, to be honest, other than changing the shape entirely and trying to do something completely and dramatically different, which I don't think, you know, Benitez has showed any semblance of doing so far this season.
Fabian Delph and Cheng Tosin starting for Everton in 2021. Who'd have thought it?
Exactly. I mean, the same thing with Fabian Delph last night. I was with Adam and I thought he was saved on Sunday specifically for this game. You know, so knowing what his fitness record is like, you know, why run the risk of him getting a tweak or, you know, sort of playing for an hour at Brentford if you're going to start him against Liverpool? And when I saw the team sheet and realised he wasn't started, I couldn't quite understand the rationale for not involving him at Brentford. It was just, it was strange. So again, you know, I totally would want him to start against Arsenal and hope he will start against Arsenal. But whether he will, who knows? Because the manager might have something completely different up his sleeve for that one.
Well, we are streaming this podcast live on Facebook there, and I've just noticed that the way Bees is sat, it kind of looks like me and Adam have took him hostage and he's wearing a straitjacket. Everton have finally sent him clinically insane.
I'm sort of the opposite of Dave there. I'm glowing on this.
The angel in the darkness. Well, I'll leave the final word with you then, Bees. But last night has exposed once again the flaws that Everton and Rafa Benitez do have in this squad. How important is January going to be for Everton in this team that very well might may find themselves in the relegation zone going into that one?
And you mean on the pitch or in terms of recruitment?
I think in terms of recruitment.
Yeah. I don't know if it's going to make much difference, to be honest. People might not want to hear this, but who can you realistically get in January? Other than when, obviously, Liverpool paid a world record fee for a centre-back for Virgil van Dijk, and that was a deal that they'd had to put off from the previous summer when they'd been a bit naughty. Who do you bring in? I mean, last time Everton spent big in January, they got Tosin, the aforementioned Cheng Tosin, and Theo Walcott, who also proved underwhelming in the long term. So, I'm sorry, people think that the cavalry's going to come. I mean, like I say, Rafa may have an ace up his sleeve, but he's actually probably competing against his former club, Newcastle United, now in terms of who's going to have money to spend in January. And they're going to kind of throw silly, they're in a position where they can probably throw silly money at sort of players who might be in that similar market to whatever they're looking at. I don't really see there being major recruitment. I know Everton have freed up a bit of space now with obviously James Rodriguez's departure and Moise Keane going out on a long-term loan back to Juventus, which will, you know, all being well, turn into a permanent deal. So they have freed up, they've got a bit that what we call the wriggle room, haven't they, despite what was said in that study. But who are you going to bring in January? I don't actually see there being many major recruits, and it's notoriously a bad market to work in. So it might not be the answer that people want to hear, say, oh yeah, Everton's going to bring in A, B and C and everything will be okay. I think he's going to have to work with what he's got to a large extent, and I wouldn't sort of pin many hopes on new faces coming in January. Certainly anyone who's going to be any sort of major signing, maybe I'm going to be wrong, but I just don't see it.
Well, for anyone who's listened, we have had a good old-fashioned rant there for the last 40 minutes, and I hope you lads feel better, and hopefully you listeners will be feeling better after the Arsenal game on Monday. Hopefully a much needed 3 points. But as always, thank you so much for listening. We've been the Royal Blue Podcast. You can follow the Royal Blue Podcast group on Facebook or find the lads on Twitter and pose them any questions you might have moving forwards. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back before the Arsenal game. We've been the Royal Blue Podcast.
You've been listening to the Royal Blue podcast from the Liverpool Echo.